seducing spirit and doctrines of devil. How about that? See, people who get involved in drugs or yoga, whatever it is, not only do they have certain experiences, but there is a philosophy, a doctrine, very clear that comes through, and it conforms to those four lies that we mentioned in the Garden of Eden. And in my research, I have found, almost without exception, the people who are the leaders in this realm were not atheists. They were raised in professing Christian homes. I remember this girl that I read, and she got out. She was rescued. She says, I was just a Baptist kid dabbling in drugs and Satanism and so forth. Edgar Mitchell, he's one of the top leaders in the New Age movement now. He wouldn't call it the New Age, although he would honor the New Age. Remember, he was raised a good Southern Baptist. Maybe some of you have heard of J.Z. Knight. J.Z. Knight at Ramtha. This is incredible. J.Z. Knight, she's been on Merv Griffin, I mean on television across the country. She was raised a Baptist. She said, my Baptist training did not prepare me for the sudden appearance of this huge being of light in my kitchen one day. She happened to be wearing a pyramid on her head, which is one of the New Age tactics. They think it focuses the force, you know, and so forth. And he revealed himself. His name was Ramtha, 35,000-year-old entity who was a warrior in Atlantis, you know, and on it goes, who had become a god, and said that if I would follow his directions, I could become his amanuensis. I could, he would channel his great wisdom for the blessing of the world through me. And what does Ramtha say? This is part of her story here. What does Ramtha say? He says, see, it is in opposition. That's one of the evidences that this book is true. Everything else opposes it. And these beings oppose Jesus Christ, the truth. Oh, they'll embrace another Jesus. You know, a Hindu will accept Jesus. Of course. They got 330 million gods. 330 million and one isn't going to change a great deal. But we call it the embrace that smothers. But when they embrace Jesus, he no longer is the Lord Jesus Christ of the Bible, but he's another Hindu guru, another exalted master, and so forth. And these entities all oppose the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so Ramtha taught her, these are some of the things he taught her, said, God doesn't have morals. He doesn't say, don't do this and don't do that. I'm quoting him. He said, isness is his only business. Just being. And Ramtha said, whatever you want to do, if you have a compulsion, whether it's murder or incest or adultery, whatever it is, do it. Because if you don't, you're holding back your spiritual growth. Because this is necessary to your spiritual growth. And then he says, above all, do not read that abominable book, the Bible. Okay? So what we have constructing itself before our very eyes is an anti-Christian universal religion, which has always been here in various forms of paganism, but now is being unified under various, you know, under the umbrella of success motivation training, being unified as the holistic medicine for health and healing. We have Dr. Simonton, for example, a specialist in cancer. He's now moved to Southern California, used to be near Dallas, and he has patients visualizing the cancer visualizing the white cells destroying it, visualizing spirit entities helping them, and is seeing some measure of success. We have it under psychology, we have it under education, and we have it even coming into the church, and we will talk about that. We're going to take a break here in a couple of minutes. We'll talk about that when we come back, and a specific part of this. Somebody was asking me at lunch about Jimmy Carter. Did I think he was a Christian? I said I had seen no evidence to indicate that he was. I'm reading from the message that he sent out on the Voyager spacecraft. Are you familiar with that? To the life out in the extraterrestrials out there. It said, this Voyager spacecraft was constructed by the United States of America. We are a community of 240 million human beings among the more than 4 billion. See, this was in 1977. Who inhabit the planet Earth, still divided into nation states, but rapidly becoming a single global civilization. So you know that he was a globalist, aiming for a one world government, the New World Order, that President Bush talked about, at that time. And he was more honest with the beings he hoped to contact in space than he was with the people who voted him in. He said, we cast this message into the cosmos of the 200 million stars in the Milky Way galaxy. Some, perhaps many, may have inhabited planets and spacefaring civilizations. If one such civilization intercepts Voyager, here is our message. This is a present from a small distant world, a token of our sounds, our science, our images, our music, our thoughts, and our feelings. We are attempting to survive our time so that we may live into yours. We hope someday, having solved the problems we face, to join a community of galactic civilizations. This record represents our hope and our determination and our goodwill in a vast and awesome universe. Signed, Jimmy Carter, President of the United States of America, the White House, June 16, 1977. The following year, he sent a message to a Congress, if I can find the name of it here, where is it? The International Congress on Yoga, Meditation, and Holistic Health. It was sponsored by the Himalayan Institute, headed by Swami Rama, who has been involved in a lot of experiments at the, in Topeka, Kansas, the Menninger Clinic. Some of the speakers representing the various religions, Hinduism, Jainism, Tibetan Buddhism, Sufism, Christianity, quote-unquote, Judaism, they were all preaching basically what I've been explaining to you from this morning on. Let me give you some examples. One of the speakers, he happened to be a Kabbalist rabbi, Dr. Gelberman, said, God can't do anything without me. An American yogi, Roy Davis, said, our nature is identical with that of God. I'm just giving you an excerpt from their talk. By the way, I was telling them, I have a tape at home, because it was Ruth Carter Stapleton who led Jimmy, her brother, to the Lord, supposedly. I have a tape of her addressing Christ Universal Temple, in Chicago, which is a unity church, and in that talk she says, we are all God, okay? Chitrabhanu, a Hindu guru, said, the belief that you are a sinner hinders your growth. In Hinduism, there is no sin. The only sin would be to suggest that you are a sinner. Another one of the speakers, and listen to this, and then we'll close with this, said, quote, I feel that there is a coming world order in which science will merge with monistic philosophy and all the world will be swept up in a new consciousness. The one distinguishing feature in that world order will be the credo, all is one. To that Congress, President Jimmy Carter sent this message. Well, I cut it down. In part it said, quote, the constructive melding of Eastern and Western philosophies and the practice in the medical and health field can be of considerable importance to society and to the well-being of all mankind, and he gave his blessing upon this Congress, melding the religions and occultism of the world together. Okay, well, I guess we're going to take a little break here.
5 minutes. I've given you a number
of names for the New Age movement. It's called the Holistic Movement. It's called the Human Potential Movement. It's called the Consciousness Revolution. And another word for it is the Age of Aquarius. And if you think these people are not biblical, let me explain how biblical they are. You remember, Jesus sent his disciples in to the village. You will see a man bearing a pitcher of water. The New Ager would say, do you know why the early Christians used the sign of a fish? Because they lived in the Piscean Age, the age of the fish. That comes from the zodiac. That's the symbol of the Piscean Age is a fish. But Jesus knew that the Piscean Age was coming to an end, and that he was not the, would not be the Messiah or the Savior for the next age, the Age of Aquarius. And therefore, when it came to the Last Supper, he sent his disciples in to find a man bearing a pitcher of water, and that he would lead them to the place where they would have the Last Supper, because this is where Jesus bowed out, and another Messiah would come, the Aquarian Messiah, the Messiah of the Age of Aquarius. And they would tell you the symbol on the zodiac of the Age of Aquarius is a water bearer. Okay? Doesn't that prove it? Amazing. But it deceives people. Have you ever heard that when Jesus, you see, part of this is to oppose Jesus. Christ, that's okay. Christ consciousness, you have to be very careful when you're using terms. You may be talking about God and you think you're communicating with someone and they're thinking Star Wars Force. Alcoholics Anonymous, for example. The 12-step programs that are big in the church today. They began they come out of the world of the occult, and I don't have time to document that. I would suggest you get a book that a dear friend of mine, dear friends, Martin and Deidre Bobgan, B-O-B-G-A-N, have written, and it's called 12 Steps to Destruction. And they will tell you where this began. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, you worship a higher power, you believe in a higher power, which is God as you conceive him to be. Could be a doorknob. Could be the Star Wars Force. It could be anything. Just so long as you believe in a higher power. But the Bible reveals specifically who God is. Of course, Jesus is God. They would believe in the Christ consciousness. You can be talking about Christ. You think you're communicating, and they think you mean Christ consciousness. And they may seem to agree with you. What they mean by that is, and you see the relationship to the altered consciousness, the consciousness revolution, what they would say is that Jesus, the only thing that separated him, I don't really use the term Jesus very often, is Christ. The only thing that separated Christ from you and me is that he had attained to a higher state of consciousness called Christ consciousness. And when we attain to that state, then we become Christ, like he is. Not far from where I used to live in Southern California, a New Age synagogue. I don't call it that. They call it that. Machom Or Shalom is the name of it. The leading rabbi is Ted Falcon. And Ted Falcon says, the day is coming when the cry will go out, will the real Christ please stand? And when the time has come, we will all arise and the world will be transformed. Because we will all have realized that we are the Christ. What a delusion. Now, have you ever heard people talk about, you know, the Bible doesn't tell us what happened between, with Jesus, between the age of 12 and 30. And don't you understand? He studied in India under the gurus. That was where he got his wisdom. Now, this is believed by many people. I want to give you just a little bit of an apologetic for a couple of their ideas. May I do that? Because you need to have some sympathy and concern for these people, and we need to show them the lie. Why there's a man, I forget his name at the moment, but he even claimed to have discovered in the late, I think it was 1890s, he was visiting a monastery in Tibet, and there he saw inscribed in the visitor's roll, Jesus of Nazareth. Well, before anybody who really spoke Tibetan could get there and verify it, the records were destroyed, so we're left to take his word for it. But if you read the Aquarian Gospel, for example, a very popular book, it puts forth this idea that Jesus studied in India under the gurus, and he came back, and that was what made him so popular and so powerful, and that's where his ideas came from. On the contrary, just to give you a few things that you all know, had Jesus studied under the gurus, he would have had to honor the guru tradition. Every guru, whether it's Maharishi Mahesh Yogi or Baba Muktananda or Vivekananda or Yogananda, who brought the Self-Realization Society, whatever it is, they were sent by their guru, and they must honor the guru. And Jesus, if he studied under the gurus, would have to honor the guru tradition, and he would have to honor his guru. Did he ever talk about his guru? No, on the contrary, he used his terms unknown to the gurus and hated by the Jews, my father, who is in heaven. The gurus, the yogis, are men who, through the practice of asceticism, vegetarianism, yoga, hiding out in a Himalayan cave or whatever, you know, and practicing yoga and so forth, they are trying to realize godhood. They are men on their way to godhood. What was Jesus? Though he existed in the form of God, he considered not robbery to be equal with God, but he made himself of no reputation, humbled himself. He came down as a man. He is God becoming a man. Was he a vegetarian? No. He ate the Passover lamb. He fed others with fish, you know, ate the fish himself, even after his resurrection. Do you have any food here? Broiled fish and a honeycomb. The Guru Gita says that the holiest act that a chela, a disciple, can engage in is to drink the water in which the Guru has washed his feet. Jesus and a guru would never wash your feet, I will guarantee you. You can't get near him. He wouldn't touch you. A Brahmin of the highest caste, Jesus stooped down and washed his disciples' feet. But Jesus offered living water, and he never said a word about washing his feet in it. Everything that Jesus said and did proves the lie of what they're saying. If he had traveled to India, he would have been a Hebrew Marco Polo. I mean, he would have been famous just for having made that journey. It simply is not true. And you know what John warns us? He says, 1 John chapter 4, and you begin to understand, as I said, the Holy Spirit in writing the scriptures covered every error that could possibly arise. And I must say I have gained some further insights after learning some of the errors. 1 John 4, he says, don't believe every spirit. Many false prophets have gone into the world. And he tells you that there's a spirit behind every false prophet. And it may be the same one behind a lot of false prophets. Remember 1 Kings 22? One spirit made 400 prophets of Israel lie. I will put a lying spirit in the mouth of the prophets of Israel. Every spirit that does not confess that Jesus, the Christ, the one and only Christ, has come once and for all in flesh, is not of God. See, now, these people do not believe that. Let me give you, wow, time flies. I want to give you just an illustration. a friend of mine, he's with the Lord now, George was his name. He was an architect to the movie To the Stars. He lived in Beverly Hills, designed homes for Elizabeth Taylor and people like this, and hotels, investments for them around the world. He became a follower of, he and his wife became followers of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. They were at the ashram, Maharishi's ashram in India, when the Beatles arrived and became the disciples of Maharishi. But he became disillusioned with TM, and he was on a spiritual quest, seeking truth, even investigating Christianity. And one day he heard of a woman in Beverly Hills, lived in a huge home, and she was the spokesperson, amanuensis, for the Great White Brotherhood. Anybody have a dollar bill? You know what's on a dollar bill. The seal, the Great Seal of the United States, with the pyramid and the all-seeing eye. That is the eye in the third eye in the forehead through which the occultists see their visions, supposedly. The Great White Brotherhood, just like the Venerable Brotherhood of India, that Napoleon Hill was in touch with, they claim to have designed the Great Seal of the United States. And she was playing a Ouija board one day. Ouija boards are dangerous. They have done experiments in laboratories where they blindfolded the persons on the Ouija board. They scrambled the alphabet so they wouldn't know where it was, and under those conditions it moved more rapidly than ever, spelling out meaningful messages. And the Ouija board told her that if she would follow directions, she would become the spokesperson for the Great White Brotherhood, one of the spokespersons. And she did. George heard about her. And one evening he went to her home. Huge living room, at least as large as this room that we're in today. And it was filled with scientists, doctors, lawyers, university professors from UCLA, which is nearby, from USC, some of them from Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, and so forth. And they were all there to draw on this great wisdom. And he said she went into a trance and put her hand over the third eye, like Edgar Casey. That's another topic. I've got to be careful. I'm going to get off on that now. He was a Presbyterian Sunday school teacher, believed in God, would go into these trances, could see. Doctors would bring the name and address of a patient. He could describe them hundreds of miles away. And they still study at the Association of Research and Enlightenment. And they still study his, these readings, they're called. And one day when he came out of the trance and they told him that he had talked about prior lives with this patient who lived in, he wouldn't believe it. Oh, he was a Christian. He doesn't believe that. But as this continued to come out, he began to believe in reincarnation. And we'll come back to that in a moment. But she put her hand over her third eye, went into a trance, and a deep male voice began to speak out of her that claimed to belong to a Hindu guru who had lived 1,000 years or so before. Now, George was a very intelligent man. He said this was the most brilliant talk that he had ever heard. But he wasn't convinced. He thought, this is Hollywood. She's an actress. She could put on this male voice, and some genius wrote this talk. So he wasn't buying it yet. But when it came to the end of the talk, the voice said, "And now, my children, if you have any questions, I will answer them. Not I will try to answer them, I will answer them." And I told you who was there. They went around the room, beginning to get questions. What's on the other side of the moon? What's inside the atom? I mean, on medical topics, everything, the most advanced questions that these scientists could give, and instantly came the authoritative answer. And George said he realized she couldn't have foreknown what would be asked, and she obviously didn't have this knowledge. He found himself face to face with an intelligence like such as he had never imagined existed. And this was no act now. When it came his time, he said, "I've been struggling to find spiritual truth, and I've even investigated Christianity, and I wondered, Why is it that when, just before Jesus died, hanging on the cross, he cried out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Instantly came the answer. This is the one the demon was waiting for all evening. My child. At the moment of death, the Christ consciousness was taken from him. And finding himself just another man, he thus cried out. See? The lie. Denial that Jesus, the one and only Christ, has come once and for all in flesh. Oh no, he just had the Christ consciousness. And I believe that the Antichrist will claim to be the latest reincarnation of this Christ spirit or Christ consciousness. Now let me say a word about reincarnation, because you're going to meet this out there. I remember being, well, I think I mentioned, I was on television, and I think it was AMLA or something, a secular station, debating with some reincarnationists. And as I hurried to get into the studio, a secular studio, a woman came running up to me on the sidewalk, and she said, "Oh, Dave, I was at the church where you spoke yesterday morning. That was fantastic. I really loved it. My father was a Baptist minister, you know, and I've been a Christian for years," and on and on. And she went around to where the audience goes in, and I entered where the guests go. To find out, it was quite a large audience and in the studio, to find out where they stood, the hostess asked, "How many do we have who believe in reincarnation?" And I saw that woman's hand go up. Now, at the church where I had been that morning, the day before, Sunday morning, the pastor was not there. I mean, if I named him, you would all know his name. And his assistant introduced me, but before he introduced me, he introduced his elderly aunt, who was sitting on the front row, and he had her stand up and introduced her as a godly woman who had had such a deep spiritual influence, a godly influence in his life. She was in the audience, and I saw her hand go up. You cannot believe in resurrection and reincarnation. It is appointed unto man once to die, and after this the judgment. If I've been reincarnated 100 times and I've left 100 bodies decaying in 100 graves, come the resurrection, which one will be raised? Whichever one is raised, 99 of them remain in the grave. Death has conquered them. But death is conquered by Christ, by resurrection. Just quickly, what this philosophy teaches. Reincarnation is based, it's interwoven, interconnected with the philosophy of karma. Karma is the cause and effect, the law of cause and effect. Karma basically says, what you sow, you reap. Isn't that what the Bible says? What you sow, you reap, but, well, we'll get to that. So that we, and you cannot make it right in one life. Doesn't that sound reasonable? I mean, look at this person born blind. Look at this other person born with a silver spoon in their mouth. I mean, that doesn't seem just. And this person is cut off in an automobile accident. They haven't had a chance. And they must come back and deal with these things. And basically what it says is, where you are each sitting today, the fact that you're here, where you're sitting, the fact that I'm teaching, and the very words that I'm speaking are all the result of the karma that was developed in a prior life in which we live. See? If it goes like this, if I'm a husband who beats his wife, in this life, I must come back in another life as a wife who is beaten by her husband. If I am a murderer, I must become the victim of murder. What you sow, you will reap, you know. And there is no forgiveness. You must pay for this. Well, pardon me, I don't know if we have time to get to Roman Catholicism, but it sounds very much like purgatory. Now, you can see the problem. This is what I want you to be able to share with people who believe in reincarnation. It's a growing belief. I'll tell you why it's a growing belief. Because it will play an important role, I believe, in the delusion that will embrace the Antichrist. If I couldn't claim to be Christ if I don't have the marks of Calvary, right? Three wounds on my side. Because you are expecting the resurrected Jesus. But they are looking for a reincarnation of the latest Christ consciousness. See? So he doesn't have to have the marks of Calvary. Jesus said, I am come in my own name, and you receive me not. I'm come in my Father's name, and you receive me not. Another will come in his own name, and him you will receive. He doesn't have the criteria. He doesn't have the credentials. He doesn't even have the genealogy of the seed of David and so forth. But he comes in the name of human potential. His own name, humanism. Now, let me explain a couple of things. Number one, you can quickly see that karma and reincarnation do not solve the problem of evil. What do? They perpetuate evil. Because if I am a murderer, I must become the victim of murder. Well, that means that the one who murdered me must then become the victim of murder. Which means that the one who murdered him must then become the victim of murder. You know, on and on it goes. It never ends. And if you go back into the past, what I'm experiencing in this life is a result of the karma of a prior life. But that was the result of a karma of a prior life, and the prior life, and the prior life. And you trace it back to the beginning, and you get to where the Hindu philosopher says the three gunas, the three qualities of the Godhead, were there in a perfect balance in the void. And something happened to cause an imbalance in the Godhead, and the prakriti, the manifestation, began, and we are all reaping the results of bad karma that began with the Godhead, and it's built into the universe, and you will never escape. Never. Because there's always another life to live to work off the karma of this life. It's a deadly philosophy. It is a hopeless philosophy. Gandhi himself said reincarnation is a burden too great to bear. So what's the solution? Yoga. That's the escape. And we have yoga, I believe, without exception, every YMCA in the United States today has classes in yoga. They think they're getting health, they're getting Hinduism. They think they're getting science, they're getting religion. And the goal of all yoga is, as I said, self-realization, to realize that I'm God. But the goal of yoga is to die. They think it's a technique for life. No, you know, the yogi learns to, you can bury him with very little oxygen, and he's motionless, and so forth. The yoga is a technique for dying. Isn't that a lie? And we have people who think they're getting physically fit by yoga, and ultimately they get hooked by the philosophy. And my suggestion is, anybody who's interested in physical fitness, why don't you take exercises that are designed for physical fitness? Yoga exercises are designed to lead you into this state of consciousness where you have a unity with God, and you become God. You realize that you are God. Now, oh my goodness, we've got a long ways to go here. The ecumenical movement we talked just a little bit about. Here is an article by a Christian, St. Paul Pioneer Press. And he's basically saying is, nothing wrong with the New Age movement. I wouldn't be concerned about it. In fact, there's a great deal that we could learn from it. The Catholic world, Catholicism is very New Age. Especially John Paul II, who is the greatest ecumenist the world has ever seen. John Paul II went to India, for example, spoke to huge Hindu audiences at University of Calcutta, University of New Delhi. He said, we haven't come here to teach you anything. We've come here to learn from your rich spiritual heritage. He said, what India has to offer this world is a spiritual vision of man, and the world does well to give heed to it. Okay? You probably saw in the newspapers where he was just in Africa, and he met with voodoo leaders. Do you remember that? And he told them, it will not be a denial of your religion to become a Christian. Says, you honor your ancestors, so do Christians honor their ancestors. You may know that in Haiti they have a saying, Haiti is 85% Catholic and 110% Voodoo. And every Voodoo ceremony begins with prayers to the Catholic saint. Okay? I could go on and on. You know that he, for example, he brought 160 leaders of the world's 12 major religions to India, Assisi, I'm trying to talk too fast now, to Assisi, Italy, where he had them praying for peace. You remember that? He said, well, let me first of all tell you some of who were there. You had snake worshippers. He said, we're all praying to the same God. Good New Age language, he said, our prayers are creating a spiritual energy. Now we're back to energy. Which is bringing about a new climate for peace. Who were there that he said were all praying to the same God? Snake worshippers, fire worshippers, animists, North American witch doctors, Buddhists and Hindus and Muslims and so forth. He granted permission to the Dalai Lama and his Buddhist monk to put the statue of the Buddha on the altar in St. Peter's Church in Assisi to have their Buddhist ceremony. Now, that is not unusual. You would find that in the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York, which is the largest Episcopal cathedral in the United States. And you might find a Hindu or a Buddhist or a shaman or whatever preaching there a Sunday morning. That's where they had Christa, the female Christ, on the cross. It is absolutely staggering what is happening. You could go to St. James Piccadilly, just off Piccadilly Square in London, where the Queen, head of the Church of England, often attends. It is a totally New Age church. You will find lectures there, their Tuesday night series, the Cosmic Christ, the New Age. I mean, it's just unbelievable. They celebrate Wesak, which is the Buddha's birthday. And they say Buddha and Christ are the same, you know, and we honor them both. I mean, this is an Episcopalian church. I'm sorry, Anglican, where the Queen often attends. Or you could have been in Westminster Abbey when they had a religious procession led by the Queen and Prince Philip, and they come in, and you have Buddhists reading from the Buddhist scriptures, Hindus reading from the Hindu Vedas, you have Muslims reading from the Quran, and so forth, and they're honoring all all religion as one. Now, this is the North American Assisi, just a flyer for the meeting. It was held in Wichita, Kansas, Interfaith Ministries, Wichita. And that's not the one I wanted. How about this? I think this was held in Wichita also. And all religions gathering together, saying we're all the same. And listen, I just give you this is the program. Amazing Grace, they began with. Vision for our community, the mayor. Prayer, Reverend Larry Greenwood, Calvary United Methodist. Greetings and peace, Jewish faith. Devotional dance, Hindu faith. Prayer, Islamic faith. Another prayer from the Buddhist and so forth. Benediction, and to just go fast, and the closing song was sung by the Community Baptist Choir. What I'm trying to say is, and I must get on to something else, this stuff is everywhere. This is just a newspaper article. I think this was in the Wall Street Journal. No, this is the Washington Post, this particular one. It says, a new aura begins at Pentagon. Meditation Club wants to put peace shield around the planet. It goes on. And it talks about the meditation club at the Pentagon, and they've had Soviets over there working on meditating together for peace and so forth. Now, I wanted to get in. I said there were three techniques. We talked about them briefly. We haven't had time to really cover the topic. Thinking, speaking, remember, what was the third? Visualizing. That is the most powerful. And let me just spend the rest of the time before we have a question and answer. And you can ask whatever questions you want. Some of the things that you would find, this is a New Age magazine. You pick them up in your New Age bookstores, your health food stores if you're interested. Nexus, this one happens to be called Colorado's Holistic Journal. Holistic Medicine happens to be the topic of this one. And you just go through here and you will find everything that I've been talking about and more. This is a course. Well, here, first of all, I said one of the names is the Aquarian, the Age of Aquarius. This is the Aquarian Foundation, and the title is What Aquarians Believe. Some Aquarians, I'm just quoting this a little bit, some Aquarians consider themselves to be Christians. Some consider themselves Buddhists, and others good members of certain other great religious faiths. Yet all or nearly all Aquarians are aware of the values and truths as well as the distortions and half-truths brought to the group consciousness by each of these movements. Aquarians are aware, too, of the many similarities which may be found in the spiritual and moral precepts of Jesus, Gautama Buddha, Krishna, Babaji, and many others. Aquarians are free thinkers in their approach to life and morals, knowing the truth of cause and effect. See, that's what happened back in the Garden of Eden. You will know good and evil. In Genesis 1, a number of times, I don't remember how many times, but God says, and God saw that it was good. God saw that it was good. He is the only one who can say what is good. They wanted to be able to say, decide what was good. To do your own thing. Okay? And you can't tell me what is right and wrong. You know, I will decide. And in our public schools, that's called values clarification. And they teach them not obedience, but responsibility. See, you mustn't let your parents impose their standards on you, or the church, or society, the government, but you must be responsible to yourself, to your own truth. And you can see the relationships here. The do unto others, this they follow the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. The worth of the Aquarian age new. Oh, this is the instead of that the Aquarian New Age commandment is, you shall love and respect yourself. This is a publication from Lucis Trust. It used to be called Lucifer Trust, so you know where it comes from. They have been talking about the New Age for the last 50, 60 years. And I just thought you would find this interesting. One of the obstacles to this development, this new consciousness and this New Age, is the narrow concept that so many Christians hold as to the role of Christ. Sectarianism that characterizes so much of Christian attitudes needs to be supplanted by a recognition that Christ exists for all peoples. And it goes on in that vein. I was reading the testimony of a pastor who went to a World Council of Churches conference, in a regional conference in New York. And he said, I knew we were in trouble when the first thing we found ourselves outside offering water libations to the four corners of the compass. And the next thing we go on and we talk about how narrow-minded it is to impose our view of Christ. There's the Buddha. Everybody, every religion has their Christ. And we should not do that. The latest World Council of Churches gathering, it was in Australia. The keynote speaker was from a woman from Korea, and she spoke of the spirit of Han, of hatred. And she talked about the spirits of the dead that are walking through Korea, and which must be recognized that it is through these spirits that the Holy Spirit is at work in the world today, and so forth. And she received a standing ovation. By the way, while we're talking about Korea, let me mention Paul Yonggi Cho, who has recently changed his name to David Cho. I don't know exactly why, because he hates me, I can tell you that. And that happens to be my name. Paul Yonggi Cho has said, when Dave Hunt has a church as big as mine, then I will talk to him. His most famous, and again, you will see the connection, his most famous for his book, The Fourth Dimension. Has anybody read it? Not afraid to admit you've read it. Okay, well, that's good. You need to study these things. But the Lord has called me to study some of these things to help people who are involved. I'll lay it out for you very quickly. The fourth dimension, he begins with a simple lesson in geometry. He says, a line is one-dimensional, a plane is two-dimensional, the two includes the one, a cube is three-dimensional, the three includes the two, and that's all accurate so far, as you know. Then he takes a leap, neither warranted by logic, science, nor the Bible. He says the fourth dimension is spirit. And he equates this with God. Now you see what he says. We have a Hindu concept of God. Oh, I'm sorry. Following his analogy, he says, and the four includes the three. So now we have a Hindu concept. God is all. You have no basis for putting God in a cause and effect dimensional relationship with the physical universe, or putting the spirit, the world, in that relationship. But this is exactly what he's done. Now he says that there are laws inherent in this fourth dimension, the spirit dimension, and that God knows these laws and he follows these laws. He says this was revealed to him when he asked God, how is it that the Nichiren Shoshu, the Soka Gakkai, is a Buddhist occult group. They have a chant, Nam-myoho-renge-kyo, Nam-myoho-renge-kyo, and they get miracles through chanting this. He says, how come they get miracles and Christians are missing out on miracles? And he says, God revealed to him the Holy Spirit, and he even quotes the language,